The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We were talking to Mark O'Keefe and Amy, mom and dad of Riley there, who has autism and has not been offered a place in primary school in September. Lots of messages coming in. Catherine, very well done to Riley's mom and dad, Amy and Mark, for flying the flag on this issue. I too was in their shoes 3 years ago when I was sent 8 rejection letters for my son, who was 8 at the time and struggling desperately in the mainstream setting from schools with ASD units within the South County Dublin area. My calls of help fell on deaf ears. I literally had nowhere else to turn when a call came through at the start of June by sheer luck. There was, is no support network within the educational system for children with autism. There is a giant hole in the system. It needs to be radically overhauled. The onus is completely on parents of autistic children to fight and desperately try everything they can to get their children the education they deserve. And that comes in from Melissa. As I said, huge reaction to Mark and Amy's interview earlier. Colm Anochter, good to see you.
And good to see you.
How are you keeping?
I'm good, thanks, yeah.
Good. You are in studio this afternoon, as always, to help deal with our parenting issues. And as I said, if you have any queries for Colman, email ray@rte.ie. So will we jump straight in? Because I always feel that I run out of time and never can never get through as many as I'd like to. So let me just jump straight in here. This email came in from a listener. Hi, Catherine. My 10-year-old son suffers with anxiety and it's all around health. She's convinced herself she has cancer and is afraid to die. She's been to doctors. There's nothing physically wrong with her. Doctors say it's physical signs of anxiety. Can you help advise what road to go down? Many thanks. And I know this person is not looking for my help. They're looking for your help.
Yeah,
on
I mean,
this
is a common one and it's common at this age. These are what we call somatic concerns. So children are consumed with pains in tummies or death or dying. Sometimes children feel terrified about falling asleep, that they won't wake up. And it's a manifestation of anxiety. I wouldn't get at all engrossed in the somatism, as in this girl's been brought to GPs and things to see if she's physically okay. I'm guessing to reassure her that she's not, but it's actually nothing got to do with the somatism. This is about permanency. So This is the age of typically around 8, 9, 10, where the child begins to have an age of reason. They start to realise the world is a little more complex than it was before. They're starting to get independence. People are starting to expect more of them to be able to be independent, responsible, and they just get overwhelmed by that anxiety and they feel it in their bodies. So these children don't have articulation to say, I'm really worried about the future, or I'm worried about I'm getting overwhelmed at school or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
So when we don't have words, when language fails, behaviour takes over. So if we can't have words to express it, we'll feel it. We feel it in our bodies. And this kind of somatic feeling of worrying about pains in tummies or dying or headaches or sometimes cancerous tumours, these sorts of things, it's a manifestation of anxiety. So deal with the origin of the anxiety, not the symptom. So It's trying to reassure her about permanency, that nothing's going to change, that she's safe, that anything that happens to her, that as parents, you'll get it, you'll manage it and help her to get through it, and just reassuring her by keeping things as steady and contained as possible, and this should pass. This is generally something akin to a phase that a child will tend to settle out of. If it doesn't and extends past a kind of a 6-month period, then you'd kind of look to maybe she needs some help to manage her anxiety. But generally, this is things that they will grow out of and manage quite easily.
Okay, so it's starting small and sitting down with her and talking through what, you know, where and how and how she's feeling.
The use of stories is wonderful with this. Read stories with them and teach about what it is to feel anxious, what it is to feel worried, what it is to feel scared. Not overly hamming the issue, because if you are talking about worry all the time, we make it an issue.
Sure,
in some respects. But just it's about teaching her to not sweat the small stuff. So, you know, in terms of you've got your family, you've got support, and reminding her of all the scaffolding that's around her, as opposed to it being very threat-focused, which is, I guess, the lens that she's seeing the world is very threat-focused. So I play it down, but manage to bolster her up. It's building her up, as opposed to necessarily managing her environment for her.
Okay. My daughter is 12 and is heading to secondary school this September. She was caught kissing a boy online, surrounded by her friends who were cheering. Generally, she seems to be very interested in boys and overtly sexual or overly sexual for her age. Is there anything I did wrong as a parent to lead to this behaviour, or is there anything I can do to change it?
Wow. That's a good question. I mean, this comes up all the time, Catherine, and it rather than getting into... Because how much is too much in terms of sexual intimacy for teenagers? It's a topic that we say in teenage years, it's all about the hormones, but we never talk about the hormones because
yes.
it's uncomfortable. So
yes.
the issue is parking the morality of whether this is too young or whatever, because how much is too much depends on your individual. It's a very subjective
totally.
View. So from the point of view, if we park that, the issue here, and this is again something that I think is normative but not normal. So this is the issue of, so the issues of teenage sexuality in terms of performative. So this is like children who are sending images of each other, sexting, this sort of stuff.
Mm.
We're describing that as normative because a lot of them are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's normal, healthy or developmentally appropriate. We need to draw that distinction. Just because everyone's doing it doesn't mean it's right. The worrying aspect of this is that she's doing this performatively. So there's something about this being captured online, friends cheering, and it being some sort of a kind of a viral thing that's being sent around. My worry here is that this child is getting into doing something sort of a performative act in order to get notoriety or visibility or some sort of an identity for herself.
It seems to be nothing to do with the emotional connection of a kiss or fancying a boy.
I don't get any sort of intimate desire from this picture or what this lady's describing. I get this. And you would be surprised how especially young girls get corralled into having to be wild or risky because they want to establish a sense of belonging within a group. But that has huge costs to their own relationship with their own bodies and as they develop through later adolescence and even into early adulthood. And we need this child and this young girl needs to be sat down and have a chat about, and you need to have an uncomfortable conversation here about intimacy, about relationships. Mm. Because if she's engaging in these acts for the purposes of notoriety, visibility, identity, the motivation behind it is that it's skewing her desire in that sense. Mm. And it will skew the template of what she understands intimate relationships to be, which is a hard pattern to undo later on. I would have the difficult conversation. Mum has said, is there anything I did to cause this? I'm never keen at saying parents are always part of the problem, but I would always say a parent is always part of the solution. So
yes.
Because you are where you are, so sit down, speak with your daughter, have the awkward conversation, give her a lens of reality of what intimacy is. It's very difficult when she's 12 to get the nuances behind that, but try and develop her sense of that and try to find her sense of belonging a different way, because this could be just a naive, lost kid who's trying to find her way in a group and is finding herself...
And equally, it's important for, 12, 13, 14, 15, they're going to be kissing, they're going to be having their first feelings, they're going to be, that's all part of it. And so I know it seems very performative here, and that's the issue for so many parents that, I mean, the phone thing is a problem.
That's
when you think
worry.
Back, like,
that's
to spin the bottle, I was just, when you were talking away there, remember the spin the bottle game? Did you ever?
Yes, absolutely.
And there was, when you were around your friends, there was that sort of uncomfortable times when...
And we need that discomfort, and we need to be able to mix gendered situations, but Catherine, the Tinderization of society and the pornification of society has completely altered that. Those days that you talk about there are long gone.
Mm.
There are the virtual influence on intimacy development is massive in terms of how young people are having an understanding
themselves
of what themselves are, what their roles are,
what is a relationship,
what's the meaningfulness
is sex?
Of it, and our technologies allows us to skip steps and go to the outcome before, and disregard the process. And if you do that in emotional and intimacy development, you're going to have issues with regards to your skipped important steps that you actually needed to go through.
Mm.
And
So as a parent then, being part of this solution, what are the steps? What do you need to do?
You have to do exactly what we have to do in all walks of life around the technology evolution, which is these children have come into the middle of a conversation and we need to tell them what has gone before. So where they missed these steps, we need to rewalk them through and say, the quickest point to A to C, you're missing B and C, and we need to actually sit down and tell you what those are, because technology is about gratification. So this is a very gratification focused, and they will send, it sells intimacy as gratification, but intimacy is about fulfillment. You know, if you say to you, do you love your partner? You might say yes, and I won't be able to tell you, well, when did that happen? Mm. They'll say it happened over a period of time. It's a fulfilling thing, whereas sexual gratification is much more immediate. Mm. And technology is a gratification type culture. It's not a fulfillment culture. So we're rubbishing things that require fulfillment and focusing on things that that involve gratification. Mm. And children are missing steps, really, really important steps in this. And as parents, we need to walk them through it.
Okay.
In a time where the conversations with our children are so premium and so limited because of the distraction of technology, they've actually never been more important than they are right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Coleman, I have a four-year-old boy who is very hyper and shouty, and I'm constantly telling him to calm down. I find myself losing it, and I don't know, and I know I don't help matters, but it's constant making noises and blah, blah, like sounds. And today we went shopping and he was in on top of his little sister in her buggy, frustrating her. She's only 16 months. I feel he's attention seeking. He's also started to leave going to the toilet for a number two too late and messes his underwear. He is toilet trained. It's a recent thing, the messing of the underwear. I'm wondering, are the two related?
Possibly. I mean, first of all, I'd say to any parent who's struggling with this, you're human. You're managing a tyrannical four-year-old would try anyone's patience. And all the books about being calm and staying, it's really unrealistic to say that you would keep that. So don't give yourself, I mean, obviously you have to keep that in check and you have to try your best to be manageable, but acknowledge the humanness of everybody.
The
in
frustration.
But in this issue, it's important to say some children will struggle with attention and concentration for reasons that are not within their own control. And I'm talking about kind of the pathological idea of ADHD. I'm not saying your child has this, but there are children who struggle with this. And when you're disciplining a child or trying to sanction, you have to decide, is my child unwilling to behave or are they unable to behave? And the distinction between unwilling and unable are completely different because the approach demands a completely different approach. So someone who's unable needs support to be able to behave, and someone who's willing needs sanction to do it. So you need to kind of try and establish that. The issue with the toilet training and the accidents, that to me is about disorganization and inattention. So they're not attending to their needs. They're not kind of organized enough to be able to do that.
So it's not attention seeking.
I wouldn't have thought it's attention seeking. Mm. But attention seeking, let's try and rephrase that. Attention seeking is relationship seeking. That's what a child is doing. When they're misbehaving, they're trying to get visibility, and they're far more likely to get visibility when they're misbehaving than behaving. So we have to change that and flip that on its head. So I'm saying to parents, catch your child being good. Catch them, reward them when they're quiet. When two siblings are fighting all the time, they're in the room quiet, we tend to go, leave them be. Yeah. Don't go near them. Don't go in there.
Oh my God.
Actually, that's the time to go in, and your previous guest would probably give out to me for this, and give the treat and say, guys, well done. You're sitting here watching telly and you're not fighting, and it's lovely to see. So you're rewarding the visibility and catching them being good.
That's so interesting.
So that the relationship seeking is much more likely when you're behaving yourself than misbehaving. Because when you're wagging fingers and shouting at them and roaring them in the car seats, that's relationship. It's a bad relationship, but it's a relationship nonetheless. If they feel they're not getting that, and the only way that they can secure your attention is through doing that, and we fall into the trap of only giving attention when they're misbehaving, we cause that behavior to continue and continue. So break the cycle, catch them being good, and just see, because attending to the misbehavior and the visibility issue, all of children who are seeking relationships seek attention.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Listen, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much, Coleman Nocter. That is all we have time for today. Mary Wilson is next on Drive Time. Have a great afternoon, and I will be back tomorrow.